Welcome to Art Watch, an enlightening foray into the lives of working artists. Come on in, step into our studio, and listen to something unique about the artistic development of some of our friends. I'm your host, Elisha. Today, we explore the story of an artist deeply rooted in community. Someone who received guidance and opportunities from others, who now works to empower the next generation. This is a story of gratitude and connectivity, bridging the gap between rap music and fine art installations. From a reservation school homecoming dance in South Dakota, all the way to the Kennedy Center. Please welcome Talon Bazile. Talon, thank you for being a part of Art Watch.
Thank you for having me, Elisha. It does mean a lot.
I appreciate that. We're here in New London, Minnesota at the Little Theater Auditorium, about an hour and a half before a performance. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, actually. It's probably like the chillest I've felt before a show, actually. I don't feel like throwing up. I don't feel like a sour stomach yet.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Tell us about what you do.
So my name is Talon Bazile. I'm a rap artist, first and foremost. I also write, I also produce, make beats as well, and help with like the engineering side of things. You know, aside from doing my own music, I try to make myself available to help others, you know, with their music and creating and putting their story to sound. And figuring out the different ways of showing people to do that has really been my MO since I graduated college, especially because like I'm addicted to this thing. I'm always wanting to put something out and work on something. So it just makes sense that if I have that much energy to not limit myself or the work to just being for me anymore. You know what I mean? So that's kind of me and what I do in a nutshell.
So you mentioned college.
Yeah.
You are a psych major.
Yes, I am. I am.
That's, me too, man.
Yeah. Brothers in arms. We were talking about this before, but you know, I know that for many, it doesn't equate. You know, more recently, there's like music therapy, but even that is so in the realm of like classically trained, you know, practice, and was actually why I prevented myself from like going into that. But I feel that my time in college studying psychology and then taking like a little bit of music theory on the side, but I was way more interested in ethnomusicology and the soul behind things and more of the romantic era style of approaches versus classical, and the emotions expressing things across like cultures and areas and communities, not even just in hip hop, but in everything, you know. So to now like look back on all that, it almost makes it, there would be no other way for me to do this type of work without, you know, that psych background. So it's like it's found its way to marry a bit more than, you know, was initially believed, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I love this. So that means you're self-taught, correct?
A little bit, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, I have a lot of people in my life who've shown me things, and just, you know, being inspired by different artists and watching them from afar, like the internet does wonders, you know. And I was a very like homebody kid too. So I was always on the internet from the early 2000s on. It was actually on the internet that I found like my first instrumental on accident. Some guy had an HTML kind of website, and he, for whatever reason, played Still DRE, the instrumental, and all of that. And I was young, I was like fourth, fifth grade, and it blew my mind. I was like, wait. And I started writing. I stayed on this guy's webpage for like 3 hours. I was just there to listen to the thing loop back because I didn't know any other way to obtain that or make it, whatever.
This is pre-Spotify, this is pre-iTunes.
Everything. This is when getting music online was more illegal, like it's taboo. Like you've seen the TV episodes of, you know, gun policemen like running in and, you know, crashing in on kids downloading, but.
You wouldn't steal a car.
No.
You wouldn't steal a purse.
No.
Why would you steal a movie?
Why would you steal, you know, you gotta make sure Metallica gets their fair share. But you know, it was in that era, and it drove me to go to those downloading sites. And now, instead of downloading, you know, these different songs, it was downloading the instrumentals to them. And then I had uncles who made beats too that I found out later. And one of them, Galen Eberhard, told me, he's like, I was listening to Outkast the other day, AT Aliens, and I noticed something. Every beat is patterned kick, hat, snare, hat, kick, hat, snare, hat. We didn't know any of we don't know music theory, nothing. So that was, that opened the door. And from then on, I was figuring out how to loop things, how to play chords.
So you started on the production side out of necessity.
Yeah, pretty much.
But what brought you to the stage?
I didn't want to perform. I wanted to be like, here's my albums, and I'll put them out, and I'll fade in the shadows. But in high school, I transferred to Crow Creek, and even though I was related to everybody, nobody knew who I was. I met a couple guys immediately who were, you know, rappers, a little bit older than me, and they knew that at the homecoming dance, you could give your CD to somebody, the DJ, and play it and rap over it. I think we did like 2-3 songs. And I got called back up later to freestyle with somebody. And the reception, honestly, was like, I remember it being really positive, like out there. People go, woo, and cheering. Stuff that, like, I don't think I understood the gravity of that at the moment. You know what I mean? They were, like, supportive of me in it. If they could have been any other way, laughing at me, putting me down. And some had, you know, throughout my years there, but for that moment, you know, when I first got there, it was love, you know, and that showed me a lot, I think, subconsciously.
Who else would you describe as your first believers?
There was this artist in Eagle Butte, his name was Maniac. He still makes music, and now he's a radio DJ back home. So he's like full on, you know, trying to get artists played locally. But back then, I was trying to make music like in 5th, 6th grade, and my cousin told me, he's like, you know, someone around here does that. Really? And he showed me Maniac and his album Nightmarica. I approached him at a powwow. I was like in 7th grade, and I told him what I wanted to do. And he didn't like put me through a test or see if I'm really dope or whatever. All he did was he said, well, that's cool, man. Just keep trying and keep trying to do it, and one day you'll be like us. And then even further, you know, I went and knocked on his door like some months later, and he, without even asking, because I was just asking him if he had tips of like how to start this thing, he's like, wait right here, shuts the door, goes back in, comes out, and he has this like string of a microphone that plugs into the old computer, the old eggshell computers. And so I recorded my first album with this. You know, there you go. And I was like, and that shut me up really quick. It's like, now you have no excuse. I mean, I'm really young, but, you know, so took it back home, and me and my cousins, we started doing that, but I never forget that support from him.
So you stood on the shoulders in some way of the artists who came before you.
Yeah.
And you're doing the same thing now with your community studio, your production work. Tell us more about that.
Mid-2021, I got brought on with First People's Fund, a nonprofit organization in South Dakota, and they were collaborating with Playing for Change Foundation on creating a studio, a recording studio, and a music program in Kyle, South Dakota, which is like the center smack dab of the Oglala Rez. Still a long ways to drive for some people, but to have something on the reservation that people can figure a way to go to and get free access to all of those things, recording, mixing, mastering, practice space, performance space, that kind of thing. Just the experience alone of going into the studio for people in that area is like, you know, we used to have to go to Denver and Sioux Falls and Minnesota for any kind of studio time period. You know, having this there, you know, we're getting people with, you know, starting to do their albums, like people in the community, I've been encouraging them to, others coming in and just finding a place to have purpose. To be a part of that, my big hope with it is that other tribes in our state and out of our state start to see, and even just small communities start to see the necessity for providing free access to things like that in spaces, even if it's, you know, sliding scale, something that's there that shows the community that there's valuable things here that could be tapped into that isn't just day labor, that isn't just, you know, making the rest of the world operate.
Well, it's an incredible venture and I think an amazing model to be able to offer something like that to your community. You've also really made a name for yourself with installation work, with atmospheric production.
Yeah.
What's been the highlight of your journey so far?
Man, well, you know, going back to that college thing, I went to the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. And like we said, you know, I had done some shows and stuff there, like concerts, house shows, fraternity shows, cultural shows, stuff where we bring people out and fundraise. But it was all like in spite of the university, right? Because I was supposed to be studying. I was supposed to be doing a work study. I was supposed to be doing all these other things. So it always felt like it was at odds. The only time it didn't feel that way was Dr. Guy Ramsey, who's a brilliant jazz pianist. He was doing an album release party for his daughter at this jazz club in Philly, and I was there to support. He sees me and greets me at the entrance, and just on there, he's like, do you want to spit some freestyles at some point in the show? And I'll never forget that. That was like highlight. But doing the install work where no relation to any college, any education system, no relation to even stuff back home, just Deani Whitehawk, who's a really great, you know, Rosebud Lakota artist, or no, Dakota artist, I'm sorry, but I know she has ties to Rosebud too. She was doing this project. I'd collaborated with her already in the Creation Story exhibit with Keith Braveheart. That was like my first install. And she was doing another one called Relative, and she explained it to me, and immediately I was on board, and I had ideas flowing about what I wanted to do. But then she told me where it was. And she's like, yeah, so it's gonna be a part of, it's called the Rising Sun Exhibit with the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. And I was like, where is that? And she's like, Center City, Philadelphia. And I'm like, I've walked past there so many times, so broke, so hungry, so like, as we say at Winshika, like pitiful. Hoping to do something with my art that, not prestigious, but, you know, something that like is exciting around this city that I've come to love. So when Deani asked me to be a part of that, and I, you know, was able to walk in there and see the other, because there was other sound installs with some of those pieces too, and I was like remarking on them and really seeing what they did and getting my mind open to what more is out there, because I'm still new to it. And then finally going to our thing, like I just teared up. You know, my mom's voice is on there, my uncle's voice is on there. Things that make sense to me are on there. That was a highlight because it's like, you know, so much of the discourse of this field of work, right, is, you know, expecting so little and to struggle and whatever. And it is that. It definitely is that at times. But those moments where it's like, my music got me this, or my music, you know, granted me this opportunity to travel here and bring my partner here and show her this side of my life that very few people have ever seen. It just meant a lot. Because again, it wasn't even rap that did it. It was the sound design work. Because like right now, Monday, I'm going to Vermilion to put up a sound install for Oscar Howe, honoring his legacy. And I'm finding how this work can even bring me closer to people in my family line who I never knew much about, which was Oscar. Hearing his life story from him, you know, there's so much audio I learned that, you know, the university there doesn't show people. And so it was like a reclamation thing too of like, I'm gonna put these things in there because I understand what he's saying and for people to hear. Those have been like the two highlights for me, the Philadelphia one and then Oscar Howe, because like they both it's strange how, like, I guess I expected, like, if I ever got involved in it, I would have to work to somebody's expectation and change myself and really try to adapt. But with these two, at least, for sure, and even the creation story one, it was more of like, this is how I feel about it, and this is what I hear.
Talon, this work has taken you on this incredible arc from reservation school, homecoming dance, to Kennedy Center, Pennsylvania, Academy for the Fine Arts. What's next for you? What does the future hold?
I don't know. I feel like as I work with the nonprofit org, as long as I'm able to infiltrate these things and try to put my Dakota mindset to things, I want to continue still trying to open that door for folks. I was never interested in like being a fame or financial success with this thing. I mean, I want to survive. I want to be able to do things that I wasn't able to do as a kid. But for my music, I mean, I feel like I'll always be releasing, but where I want it to go is, you know, I'm pretty dead set on hoping and manifesting, you know, the opportunity to, you know, do a horror movie soundtrack or a drama soundtrack, and for a film and for a video game. Like I still really want to do that, and I feel like more of the art installed stuff I do, and even theater sound design that I do, inch me towards that. But those are big dreams for me. And then too, like, I really would like to perform a large audience event, like whether it's a festival or something, and something that is, you know, kind of like this, where it's not heavily focused on me being native, you know what I mean? I would like to be weird. I would like to be, you know, my real self on stage fully in a atmosphere where it's not party vibe, but not so serious, you know what I mean? Because I also want to do the opposite, which is like a big cafe show where it is serious and it is more, you know, contemplative jazz type thing, because I have material for both. But those are the things I really still see in my mind wanting to do.
For people who want to hear more of your work, be it the installation, sound design, I know the Oscar Howe exhibit is going on right now, but also your rap work, where can they find that?
I try to keep things up to date at bazTK.com. So that's B-A-Z, the first three of my name, Bazil, and then TK, which stands for Dokakute, which is my ancestor's name. So bazTK.com, and mainly because that one has links to all of my socials. If you're more of an Instagram person, Facebook, even TikTok, I'll post stuff. I really just post like glimpses into my brain and stuff like that, and previews. So,
Talon, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much again for having me, and I do appreciate it.
Love you, man.
Thank you for listening to Art Watch. If you enjoyed the show, please write a review, leave a tip at leaveatip.org, or if you can, support the production with a monthly donation. Information on this, links to Talon's work, future episodes of this show, as well as the video version of the podcast, can be found at artwatch.us. ArtWatch is made in partnership with the Fribourne County Arts Initiative. Located in the heart of Albert Lea, Minnesota's historic district, the FCAI is the go-to nonprofit for pioneering new shows and artistic concepts. This program was also made possible with generous support from the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council, and Fribourne Maurer Cooperative Services. ArtWatch is a production of Inkfish Design Studio. Executive producer, Elisha Marin. We have a great show lined up for you next month. Make sure you're subscribed. Stay tuned in. Also, coming soon, some exciting news I really can't wait to share. Hope you'll join us next time. Till then, take care.